from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
I guess we're going to start.
All right, is everybody ready for the podcast?
Podcasting action. I want to hear everybody say, oh, God, yes, it's the beginning of this atheist convention. We can't wait to hear this live podcast. Yeah.
Woo! That's a good response. All right, excellent. That's what we wanted. All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jacob Fortan. This is the Good Atheist Podcast coming to you live from the Atheist Alliance International Conference in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. And I just want to say hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, here's the thing. Normally, we're pretty used to being in a basement recording our podcast. I don't know if any of you have actually heard any of our stuff. Most likely, no, right?
Oh, there we go. We got one person.
We got three people. Okay.
So they're already like, we don't like these guys. We know what they're all about.
You know what? That's probably the most I've ever actually had in terms of hands lifting up. Who's heard of us? For those of you who are unfamiliar with our work, we're kind of like the atheist curmudgeons / assholes of the scenes. So hopefully none of you mind too much, but in terms of the strong language or the what's the word I'm looking for? Angry rhetoric. You're going to be hearing plenty of it in the next little while. I'd like to introduce to you my co-host. We have here Ryan Harkness.
Yeah.
Come on, give him a hand, everybody.
Give him a hand.
Even though you don't know who he is, give him a goddamn hand. He works very hard at the Good Atheist. We also have Mr. Jeffrey Jones.
Hey, everyone.
And as you can tell from his clothes, he's a very colorful man. All right, he likes his blue and he likes it dark. all right, now the format.
How so many things?
The format of how it's going to work is we're going to do a half an hour of the show, then we're going to have a panel afterwards, and you guys can ask questions to the panel or just make comments however you guys want. We're coming in live, so it's a bit of an experiment. Hopefully, there'll be plenty of laughs and jeers or cheers coming from you guys, because apparently, since it is live, everybody's going to know if we're funny or not, and this is a really big test. So if there's nothing but silence, I'm going to know that I suck. So if you guys can actually sort of, you know, be enthusiastic, I know it's kind of hard, you know, we're the first act here. And I'm sure you guys are still warming up.
I came into this completely nervous because not only is this our first live podcast in front of an audience, but it's also my first atheist convention. I'm an atheist convention virgin, so I had no idea what to expect and what was going on. That's good because I had a dream. I had a dream last night, and you know how you're supposed to imagine the crowd naked, but I was the only one naked, and I was saying all these things that were factually wrong, you know, about atheists. You say something wrong, it's like a dog whistle. Their ears perk up and they're like, "Oh!" And I just
someone said something wrong.
I'm going to blog about this.
The room being full of stern people saying that's not right, and Daniel Dennett over in the corner, and he's the only other person that's naked, and he's just shaking his head, "No, no." So that was my nightmare about everything, but it is so far so good, I suppose. Eh?
That's pretty weird.
I don't
nightmare.
See a naked Daniel Dennett, so
more sadly. So.
On today's show, we're going to be talking about a variety of things. The first thing that we're going to be talking about is, you know, the label that everybody calls us now, which is the New Atheist. I'm sure many of you have heard this label. It sounds a little bit strange and almost disingenuous, saying, what exactly do you mean by New Atheism? Because it seems to imply that atheists are a relatively new phenomenon, and I think that all of you guys know that we are not relatively new. The only thing that's pretty much new is the fact that we're actually gathering, which is something that a lot of people seem to be uncomfortable and scared about. The fact that, oh my God, they're getting organized.
Well, didn't you write a post that was talking about the idea that atheists need to start coming together more? And there was a big backlash from the community saying, getting together is what religions do. It's what humans do. What humans do. We all get together. We like to be around other people. Your friends, smiles, handshakes, fun.
Hanging out's a good idea.
Yeah,
who knew?
Who knew that hanging out is like one of those human activities, eh?
I like people. Does that make me religious?
No, it really doesn't. the first thing I want to talk about, actually, and I don't know if a lot of you are you know, browse a lot of the blogosphere or, you know, listen to a lot of podcasts and so on and so forth, but a couple of months ago, Phil Plait had a speech entitled, Don't Be a Dick. And I just want to let you guys know that I'm going to have a bit of a reverse speech to that called, please be a dick. I'll get into the details of that later, but I guess the crux of what I want to say in this is the idea that atheism is not this, how do I describe it? It's not one thing. You know, it's not a bunch of people necessarily talking only about the fact that there is no God, or it's not only about the necessity for skepticism. There's a lot of different types of atheism, and I think it's one of the things that we have to recognize first of all. When we say new atheists, what do we mean? Well, we mean that atheists are being a little bit more vocal. Atheists are definitely starting to get together, and this is an example of it happening. But we're still relatively early on in the game, eh? I mean, this room's still not full. Not that I want to complain or anything. I think you guys are a bit
proud. I'm pleasantly surprised.
But we're not yet to a point where we can declare ourselves a full-fledged movement, and I'll tell you why. The first thing is that I think that we have a tendency of ignoring a specific and a fairly large segment of atheists that are out there. You know, they're the kinds of people that probably don't even recognize themselves as atheists. They're the people who are like, well, I just don't believe, right? I really don't care about the issue of God. It doesn't affect me in any kind of way. It doesn't matter. It doesn't affect my life. And these are the kinds of people that we actually have to be a little bit better at reaching out and saying, well, actually, it kind of does. And even though you might think that not believing in something is
a strange reason to get together.
It's kind of like saying, like, let's get together because we all don't like science fiction. That would be a bit of a weird conference.
It's
you know
an anti-con.
But yeah, we haven't. I think that as in general as a movement, we haven't done a lot to attract, say, the contingent of people that really don't care. I think I'd like to hear from a show of hands. How many people here actually care about the fact that God doesn't exist? Can I have a show of hands? Like, yeah. All right. Actually,
clap. Clap.
You know what's funny about that? Not everybody claps. Come on, guys. You're here now. You should care.
It's like atheism 101.
Yeah, atheism 101. But, you know, that goes back to the whole idea that even atheists who are fairly confident and positive about their non-belief don't like to necessarily advertise.
We're almost
even
worse
at an atheist conference.
We're almost worse than Canadians. We don't carry our pride necessarily on our sleeves. I'm not even wearing sleeves, so I can't really
go.
Do you ever wear sleeves?
No, I don't.
There you go. You like to wear t-shirts. You're a t-shirt man.
I do. They grab my supple body in a pleasing way.
Supple. So what do we have lined up for today?
Well, you know, I want
in terms of the Atheist Conference in general, let's talk about what's going on in the Atheist Conference for people that are not here listening to it live, or even people that are here that probably didn't read the
packaging, everything like that. Oh, we got a bunch of people here. We got P.Z. Myers is here. I don't know if he's here in this room, but he is here in general.
All right, give
P.Z. Myers a really big
blog comment. I'm sure most of you have probably read his blog.
Ferengula, my personal favorite blog. He is the ass kicker, the unofficial ass kicker of the atheist blogosphere, and
he's
I love
unapologetic.
Him for it.
Absolutely, definitely unapologetic.
And of course, Daniel Dennett, one of the four horsemen.
Man, Daniel Dennett's here, everybody. Yeah. You better be excited. You better be.
And Richard Haynes. This guy's an interesting guy. He interests me because former born again Christian. He was an associate minister for a 12,000 person megachurch. And he was one of the people that basically left it because there was a scandal, as there always seems to be scandals in these megachurches.
Yeah, it seems to kind of happen.
What is up with that, eh?
I'm not going to take a guess as to what the scandal was about, but they're all it's an unpleasant.
Did somebody say sex? Ding 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 ding. We have a winner, everyone!
Yeah.
Wow, you must be psychic.
Always the unpleasant multiple choice question, and. But he's also, you were saying that he's one of the Atheist Nexus people, right?
That's right. He started Atheist Nexus. I don't know if everybody, how many people here have accounts on Atheist Nexus or participate?
You can clap.
Remember,
nice.
This is an audio podcast, everybody. They don't see your hands.
You'll find that we kind of steal some of those aspects from say, a sermon where we say, put your hands up and say hallelujah for atheism.
There we go.
Beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Who else we got here? Sarah Posner. She wrote a book called God's Prophets: Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values Voters, talking about how the divide between church and state is weakening, and how basically a lot of these preachers are telling people how to vote, and it's a pretty scary thing.
And they still seem to have their tax-exempt status, despite the fact that they're breaking the law. And of course, we're too pussy to do anything about it. I mean, I'm sure you guys remember how much the Mormon church paid to get Prop 8 passed. I think it was something like $30 million. And meanwhile, they still are allowed to have tax-exempt status. I mean, I don't know if it's one of those things that if we actually got a lot more vocal, we could make a change or we could make a difference to that. I don't know if we're that big yet. But it's not something that I want anyone here to forget about, you know? Maybe it's an issue that still is going to remain dormant for a while, but, you know, the issue of gay marriage in California is not going away. And definitely when you see the kind of religious involvement in politics, While they benefit from the fact that they don't have to pay taxes, they get all these special privileges, and we're just like, you know what, if you want to participate in politics, I might not necessarily be against it, but you got to play by the rules. I could definitely use some of your tax money to, well, I don't know, pay for shit, which is something that apparently nobody wants to do anymore. We don't want to pay for anything. It's too expensive.
Now,
what else have we got?
This guy here I got a lot of respect for, Michael Mapagi Kirumira. He's the leader of the Atheist Association of Uganda. Now, we're sitting here in Canada, in Montreal. It's a comfortable, relatively comfortable place to talk about atheism. I know I felt a little bit less comfortable last night. We were like across the hall from the Sudanese.
Oh, yeah. Convention. Yesterday there was a Sudanese convention.
Saudi Arabia,
excuse me. Yeah. And I was wondering, because the CFI were here last night, and I just thought, is there a fight going to break out or something?
That was just a little bit on tenterhooks, because it's not so much that, you know, we don't want to talk about atheism and everything, but we want to be civil people and we want to get along with everybody. And it can be a divisive topic. But, you know, the main thing I was disappointed about was it wasn't us that had if you were here last night, you know it. They had the biggest feast in the world over there, and we were on like crackers and bread. So I was.
this was our feast. Some water.
Yeah, but you know it's comfortable, relatively speaking, talking about atheism here. But if you're over in Uganda, that's the front line. That's some serious stuff to talk about it there. So I got to say, hats off to him. And I hope people stick around. He's talking Sunday at 10:15 in the morning. I don't know how crazy the atheist sock hop we're going to be having on Saturday night is, but I hope some of us, you know,
save your energy.
One less beer or two glasses of water before bed, and you'll be good to go.
You're calling it a sock hop. I don't imagine it's going to.
Why? What's wrong with a sock hop, man?
No, there's nothing wrong with a sock hop. It's just, you know, I don't imagine it'll go raucous into the night, you know.
I feel almost like, in comparison with someone who's in the front lines of atheism, almost kind of like a pussy. Like I said before, this is our first stab at taking part in conferences, and I mean, it's right in our hometown. I don't even have any excuse. If I didn't show up, I don't think I should even put the word atheist in my blog. I should just quit.
Yeah.
So it's at my back door. I traveled 20 minutes to get here.
Cost us $2 and change.
Cost us $2 to get here. That doesn't say a lot about us. I mean, I definitely feel that, I don't know about you guys, but I have not, even though we, you know, I have a website and I have a podcast, I definitely haven't felt that I've participated enough. I hope that through these kinds of conferences, through just more people being involved, it kind of develops a bit of a snowball effect where we feel the need to voice our concerns, our serious concerns, because, you know, we could just joke around and say, hey, the world's fucked up and what are you going to do about it? And we hear that a lot, you know, people saying, well, you can't change the world, people are the way they are, you can't convince them of anything. I'm sure you've heard probably plenty of your friends that are themselves non-believers who aren't here right now, because they thought, why should I show up? I mean, I just don't believe, and who cares, right?
People are still going to believe in God on Monday, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of like the wrong way to look about it. You know, if you look at it from that limited perspective of saying, well, I can't change anybody's mind, and therefore I don't even need to say anything about it. I'll just let people decide on their own. They'll come to their own conclusions. It kind of takes for granted the fact that we don't get a lot of speaker time when it comes to our own issues and our own ideas. You know, we get silenced pretty damn fast. And as soon as somebody mentions the word non-believers, say President Obama recognizes us for 5 seconds and says, yes, this country has some non-believers, And then every religious person pretty much goes apeshit saying, what's going on here? Is Obama himself an atheist recognizing these people? And you're like, but we exist, you bastards. We're here. We've just never been particularly vocal, because why should you when everyone around you keeps trying to shove God down your throat?
And this kind of goes back to the idea we were talking about the new atheist, because, there's such a wide variety of atheism, and you were saying you weren't feeling particularly like a good atheist.
No, I think the name is ironic.
Yeah, because you weren't coming to conferences and you weren't doing everything, and I think there's a lot of confusion about what makes a good atheist. And a lot of people say a good atheist is somebody who's polite and doesn't bring up these kinds of issues in front of other people, or some people say that you should be fighting certain battles, and some people say that you should be fighting others. And, you know, to me, I feel like it's not so much a Venn diagram of atheism going on, because we all don't believe in God, but then you have the hardcores that we have, say, that come to conference, who are kind of in the middle. And to me, you know, being a young idiot, that makes me think of a breast. So I think of it as the atheist breast. And we spend so much time.
I want to see that on a t-shirt.
Here we go.
We spend so much time paying attention to the nipple. And the nipple is an important thing. It's good. I love it. But we have to caress the breast, pay some attention to it, love it, kiss it, speak to it, make sure that it doesn't feel ignored. Because I would say that out of the huge number of new atheists, there's such a number that isn't involved in all of this, who don't go to the blogs, who don't go to the conferences. Their main source of, I guess, atheistic angst and rage is reading MSNBC and seeing what just happened. And being frustrated with that. And that's as far as it goes, because they don't understand what they can do. They don't understand even maybe that there's things like this going on, or that there are groups dedicated in many of the major cities to coming out and having a couple drinks on a Wednesday night. And it's important for us to figure out how to kind of reach out to them and bring them under the tent.
Bring them into the fold.
but just to kind of go over that and talk about kind of some of the things, because we all believe a lot of different things. And some people think that we should be fighting for some things. Some people think we shouldn't. I mean,
we got a bunch of issues that we're going to ask you guys. What do you think is important?
Yeah.
Again, you'll be forced to clap. And if you don't clap, I'm going to put death stares.
We're going to scowl at you.
Just for example, back when the Atheist Bus campaign just started, I was kind of saying, I don't really agree with this. I don't think it's the right way to go about it. Complete idiot looking back. It was an amazing success. But at the time, I thought it was a bit too in your face and everything like that. So different atheists believe different things.
Mm-hmm.
So let's try and go through a couple of these things. And you guys clap if you think these are the most important things that we should be fighting for right now as atheists.
The hills to die on.
Yeah, that's right.
the hills we should be dying on right now. What do you guys think about removing the influence of religion from science and scientific discovery? That's a pretty popular one.
I'll clap to that. Yes, please. I mean, anybody who gets Templeton Foundation Award, you know what's going on, right? It's like, oh, I've catered to religion, and now I can get $1.5 million. Don't think I haven't been tempted, by the way, although I'm no scientist. But, I mean, then again, I can just say,
you can talk big.
Yeah, I can talk big. I'm a smack talker. I would love one of those prize monies, but, you know, intellectual integrity and all. God damn it.
You're supposed to be moralist. Jeez.
Now, here's one that might be considered a bit more controversial. Don't feel like you have to clap if you don't agree, because the whole point is we see what people think. Banning the burqa.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
I'd say about half.
And is it the same for minarets? Or people feel the same way about minarets? No. Yeah? That's interesting. But that's a good example. Like, not everyone necessarily agrees with it. You know, truth be told, I have been a bit on, I'm not going to say the fence on the issue. I've discussed the issue of banning the burqa a lot on my podcast. I've always said that the funny thing about the whole burqa situation is I think we're having the wrong conversation. You know, when people are deciding, well, if we ban the burqa, it's infringing on people's freedom. And I think that we're stuck in a weird situation, because we know what the burqa represents. And we know that although there might be support behind it, even from the people who wear it, it's one of those things like, you know, if you're in North Korea, are you really going to talk against the leader? You know, you might not love him, but if you say anything, you can find yourself in a prison or in a world of trouble. So we're in a weird situation, right? We don't want to curtail anybody's freedom per se, but we recognize that something like the burqa is a bit of a problem. I've said the conversation is being sort of manipulated into this whole idea of, well, you're infringing on my religious freedom. And really the conversation that we should be having is saying, like, well, we actually believe in North America that the principles of Islam, or at least the fundamentalist Islamic principles of, like, why the burqa is necessary and that kind of stuff, is in conflict with our society, with our culture. We're like, no, you tend to treat women as property. They're less than human. They're not allowed to get educated. We have a problem with that here, and we don't know how to deal with it. So sometimes, I guess, the feeling, I mean, we've seen this in France because they're the first ones to do it. And, you know, even around here, we're like, not sure if we should do it. So it's interesting to notice how many people are like, yeah, let's get behind and ban that shit, and other people saying, don't know.
Here's another one that I think, you know, if we could snap our fingers and make it happen, we'd all clap and say it's great. But I think, you know, a lot of people say it's gonna cost us a lot of capital to do and maybe isn't the fight for now. Getting In God We Trust off the American money. What do you guys think?
Actually, I have to wonder, how many people here have American dollar bills that you've scratched out the In God We Trust? Is there a few people?
All right,
I like it.
Personally, I just draw like little devil beards on the presidents and horns, but that's just
me. I just get my American money exchanged.
You just want good old Sir Wilfrid Laurier looking back at you.
I just want money that's not by default going to be worth like a set amount if you go to a store. Like, this is worth $1.50 forever.
You know what? I'll tell you one thing. I like our Canadian money because it's nice and colorful. I don't know if you guys. Yeah, beautiful, isn't it? Yeah, we got color. You guys are all greenbacks. Boring. Get some color in that shit. That's where everybody else is color except for you guys.
Here's my personal one. This is my atheist issue because I think that it's basically, you know, what's going to break over the next 50 years, the church is back, and really make people say, what's up with those guys? Defending gay rights. What are you?
Better be everybody.
Jeff is the show's resident gaytheist.
There we go.
And we bring him on for a collection of gaytheist issues and stories.
There you go.
So
we don't want to look ignorant, so we have to have someone who is at least gay. So I'm like,
I'm the affirmative action of the atheist movement.
Yeah, no, I love that one because you know, you look back at the history of the church and they've done a lot. They've sided on the wrong side of history with a lot of stuff, but up until this point. You know, the glare of the camera, the new media age that we live in another 50 years, it's all going to be on camera. It's all going to be on print that we can easily access on the internet. And people are going to realize who was holding this movement back. And I think when that happens, I mean, we're already seeing the next generation. You want to talk about a divisive issue that's pushing kids away from the church. It's the church's intolerance towards homosexuals. And, you know, as horrible as it is, for atheism, I see it as being something that's really going to show people where, you know, where people stand as far as true tolerance.
Well, religiosity and like homophobia tend to go like this, you know.
So. They tend to be very related. Yeah. I think that in the future, what we're going to notice, and I hate to use these words because creationists use these words like wedge strategy. I think you might have heard something like that. But, you know, Christianity right now has a strong kind of ecumenism where different Christian faiths are still working together. They're like, well, as long as you believe in Jesus, that's all that matters. But in the future, I think what we're going to see is a strong split in terms of religions that find that homosexuality is wrong and evil, and those that don't. And that affects that whole, you know, that whole ecumenism. And I think that that's where we start needing to kind of, you know, push ourselves a little hard and say, well, you guys got to pick. You have to pick. If we let religions get away with this, with being homophobic, with being bigots, then that's on us. You know, we really need to put it to them. If they start saying things that we don't agree, I mean, imagine, say you're at a family reunion and all of a sudden you have an embarrassing family member who keeps saying things against, I don't know, anybody that has skin that's darker than this envelope.
Yes.
You know, you should say something. There's a lot of times people are like, oh, well, that's just a grandpa, and he's just from a different generation. I'm like, no, you need to tell, hey, grandpa, that's not all right, okay? That's not how you're supposed to think. You can be sympathetic towards prejudice only in that, you know, sometimes people are part of different generations. They may have believed something that is no longer true, but it doesn't excuse that belief. It's just that it explains it. And I think it's up to us to really try to educate people a little bit You know, when it comes to that stuff, if a person's being a bigot, you have to call them on it. I'm sick and tired of everybody saying, oh, well, it's their opinion and it's their right. I mean, a lot of religions always pull that card, eh? It's like, oh, well, they're trying to infringe on our rights to say what we want. Meanwhile, you're like, dude, you're being a fucking bigot. And that's the bare bones of it. It doesn't get more complicated than that. If you're against homosexuality, you are bigot. All right, I'm sorry. That's just the honest truth.
I'm going to bring up one more issue because, you know, other than gay rights, it's my other favorite issue, and it's what I spend all my time as an atheist doing. You all can clap if you also do it. Killing Christmas. Yeah! Down with Christmas. Destroy it.
As long as I still get things.
Yeah, I still want to get presents. I'm not with you on that
Daniel
one.
Boo!
Everybody should boo. Yeah, there you go. Some boos.
Yeah, so I think we're almost ready for our panel. Do you want to touch on being a dick?
Yeah,
a little bit more
I do. Let me go on my tirade. Can I go on a tirade for 5 seconds?
You already were.
Oh, you shut your mouth. Snarky, you're the silent panel. Be quiet. Okay, well, here's a couple things that I wanted to talk about in terms of that whole be a dick. Now, I'm not going to say be a dick. Everybody in this room, be a dick. I'm not going to suggest that.
Everybody at all times.
No, that's not what I'm saying. But the one thing I totally disagreed with Phil on, he was asking the question in his audience, how many of you have stopped believing because a person was in your face or made fun of you in terms of your faith? Actually, I want to know, is there anybody here that actually stopped believing because they were either ridiculed or somebody sort of like made fun of them? Is there anybody? There might not be a lot. You know, there might not be anybody here. That's fine. But I do want to suggest, actually, that it does have comedy and wit, sarcasm, all these things do have a purpose. Shame does work. I mean, I hate to admit it, okay? But if I shame you on the fact that you don't know shit, you might actually try to go back and learn something. Now, for sure, what normally tends to happen is if you shame someone or even if you make fun of them, a lot of times it'll just, you know, sometimes reinforce their belief. They'll say, oh, well, these people are intolerant and they're making fun of me. And that's fine because we don't need everybody in the atheist scene to actually be nice. We really don't. Atheism itself is a broad term. It just implies that we don't believe in God. That's all it really implies. But in terms of how people can start, you know, the types of messages that people want to hear, trust me when I say that a significant portion of the people that listen to the show are frustrated individuals that live in very isolated places, that feel angry, that feel resentment of the fact that their religion is being forced on them. It's not their choice, that they can't speak out because maybe they have a job somewhere like a Catholic school. I have a lot of people who are in those kinds of positions. They can't say anything, and they really feel frustrated. They want someone to vent for them. They're just like, please, someone just talk smack for like 5 minutes so I can just feel, thank you. Thank you for saying that. And that is a surprising portion of the people out there. In fact, when we talked about the new atheism of trying to reach out to people, a part of that is reaching out to people that are basically frustrated. And I think that what happens is over time when you start, you know, if you're being funny about it or even somewhat vitriolic, it does force people out of their complacency to a large degree. I can't tell you how many emails that I've gotten from people that have said, you know, you've inspired me to get involved. You've inspired me to, you know, start something, to start my own group or whatever, because I just couldn't deal with the fact that I was just the only non-believer of the around. And sometimes even, this may be surprising, but sometimes non-believers don't even know we exist. Okay, they're not even aware. The concept that there is a growing movement of atheists, having conferences, doing shows, and those kinds of things are completely and utterly removed. They don't know. They have no idea. Maybe they don't use the internet. Maybe they don't talk to people. Maybe they don't have, like, you know, access to secular radio. As far as they're concerned, the entire world is religious, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, that I think is important about being sometimes a bit of a dick is that we have to remember that religions do have an agenda. I don't mean that in terms of a conspiracy theory that they all...
they receive orders from the Grand Pope by transmissions through his hat.
Actually, I think they do.
I think so, too.
But they have a very clear agenda, and that's that they want to convert people to their religion. And they're unapologetic about it. And they will do oftentimes whatever is necessary to make that happen. be it lie to people, be it trick them, be it a lot of times shame them. The same tactic that we're like, well, you can't shame people. That's what religions do. It's really successful, okay? They shame you into being religious. They're like, you are a human being and you're a sinful piece of shit. So you better believe in Jesus for some reason that we won't really explain.
Because we said so.
Because we said so. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And the last reason I think that being a dick is often useful is it takes away this idea that things are sacred. You know, that you can't talk about this, that you can't make fun of me. Be respectful. You have to have, tolerance to my belief. And I've never been really convinced from that line of argument. Oh, be tolerant towards my belief that it is itself intolerant of other ideas. Yeah, I don't know if I'm really going to do that. Thank you very much. I'm gonna continue to be a dick. Now, most of you who listen to this podcast might say, I didn't quite enjoy these guys. They're a little bit too hardcore. And that's fine. You guys don't have to. You know, that's the beautiful thing about atheism. It doesn't need to be something for everybody. It just has to appeal to a certain group. And that's what I think that our responsibility as atheists is to find different voices, to find our voices, to put them out there. I mean, I don't know if you guys have blogs or if you write or if you get involved. Please do. All right, please do. You have no idea the kind of influence that you have when you put yourself out there. I mean, I realized that only recently. I mean, for a couple of years, I was just recording a podcast, putting it out there, and we were just forgetting about it. You know, we just didn't even know I was out there. And the next thing you know, we have thousands of people writing us emails saying, like, oh, thank you so much for your podcast. And you're like, what are you talking about? Who are you? What's going on? So, yeah, having a voice, saying something, you will be surprised. People will empathize with you. And I think that's a really important thing that we often underestimate, is that the way that we make connections with one another is through empathy. We empathize with people that are in similar situations or even have similar viewpoints. And though that empathy often encourages us, gives us courage to get involved, you know, and that's what I've noticed. The people who have communicated with me have said, after I listened to you, I felt like I needed to get involved, and I think it's just because whatever I said, I don't even know what I said, because, you know, I barely understand half the shit I say, but something that I said resonated with them, and that was what is important. Just putting ourselves out there.
And everything he says is dickish, so yeah. Trust me, it works. It works. There ain't nothing worth getting done that wasn't achieved through a little bit of dickishness somewhere along the way.
Yeah, you can't always be nice.
Someone has to be the asshole.
All right, let's move on to our panel. Let's bring our panel up, everybody. Okay. So I'm going to introduce the panel. All right, our first panelist is Matt Sherry. He is the representative for the International Humanist and Ethical Union, as well as representative for the United Nations. Everybody give a hand for Matt Sherry. All right, our second panelist is Christine Shelska. She is studying the intelligent designs movement attempt to position their theory of creationism. And she's also studying at the, what did you say it was, the Science and Communication Perspective? You said it had an unusual name because your department got slashed? The Department of Communication. Okay, thank you. And our last panelist, I think I'm going to get his name wrong because it's got a K and an N and I just don't know it. He's a comedian slash writer, contributor for The Onion and The Huffington Post and also This American Life. Put your hands together for John Neffel. Did I say it right?
Yeah!
Woo! Say it right? Yeah, I'm going to have to pass you the mic, so. Unfortunately, they didn't have enough mics for us. Okay, so what's going to happen is I'm going to cover a couple topics, and then after those topics are covered, I want any of you guys who has questions for the panels to come forward. There's a mic over there. But the first thing I wanted to bring up for you guys is, I suppose this is a little bit ironic, and I just love it. I don't know if you guys read the November 2010 issue of Awake magazine. This is the Jehovah's Witness magazine.
I missed that one.
You missed that one? Oh, what a shame. Because the title of that one was, Is Atheism on the March?
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, baby. All right, here's a couple lines that I just pulled from there, and you guys, this panel can comment on it. The first quote is, called the new atheist, they are not content to keep their views to themselves.
Yeah.
while the new atheist reproaches religion, he reveres science.
Oh, yes, revering science.
And the last thing that they said, which I sort of like just absolutely loved, is to say that the universe, its laws and life just happened is intellectually unsatisfying. All right, I'm going to have the panel sort of turn on to that.
That's fantastic. One of my favorite moments from the past month or two is when Stephen Hawking, you know, recently came out and he said that because there is a force like gravity, the universe can create itself. And I was just so happy. And I feel like that is the kind of answers that, you know, that people like us are willing to wait for, is we're not just because there are some unanswered questions right now, that's perfectly fine, and that's more intellectually satisfying than being like, oh, well, so there's a few things we don't know. Maybe some guy in the sky did it with lightning bolts. Like, that's ridiculous. So I feel like with every new development that helps us understand a non-supernatural universe, we get closer towards a holistic understanding that is ultimately much more intellectually satisfying than invoking any sort of supernatural powers.
I just get a kick out of the fact that we're being accused of being on the march by the people that wake you up early in the morning. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm on the march now? Yeah, really, seriously, why? Because I'm suddenly talking, be like, oh, I don't like your religion, and I actually think it's ruining society. Be quiet, we don't need your opinions. I'm sorry, what? You interrupted me at breakfast, man. Breakfast, most important meal of the day, to tell me about what? About how I shouldn't get blood transfusions if I get hit by a car? Yeah, I'll get right on that. Here's another thing. Speaking, actually, you were talking about Stephen Hawking, who came out and basically said that, well, you know, gravity exists and the universe can come from nothing. The World Net Daily, I don't know if you guys visit the site, World, sometimes it's called World Nut Daily, I don't know if you've read it. It's kind of like the right-wing Huffington Post, I suppose is the best way to put it. And they had Ray Comfort. You remember Ray Comfort, Banana Man? Yeah, Banana Man. He has since retracted, by the way, the fact that you know, the banana is not proof of God, so wow. He has a lot of intellectual integrity, so don't speak any negative parts about Ray Comfort, okay? I don't want to hear it. But here's what Ray Comfort had to say about Stephen Hawking. He said, Hawking commits several fallacies of logic. He violated the unspoken rule of atheism. He isn't supposed to use the word like creator or made. They, the words, necessitate a creator. Can one of you smack his ass down, please? What about you, Matt? What do you think of that... of the idea that you can't use the word create when you're trying to talk about the universe. How do you feel about that?
I actually try and avoid words like creature because they imply it's a creator. So I'm a politically correct atheist in that way.
So
however, Ray Comfort smacking down Stephen Hawking for logical fallacies is
well,
quite an achievement.
He didn't just say that. The other beautiful little quote we have from him is, it is embarrassingly unscientific to speak of anything creating itself from nothing. So we have Ray Comfort saying that Stephen Hawking is being embarrassingly unscientific. Yes, Ray Comfort.
Does he explain how God created himself from nothing?
See, that's not necessary because God is super. Come on, it's basically that, everybody. I mean, like, you can just joke around and say, no, there's actually this really powerful theological reason why God can exist outside of time and space and still apparently interact with it whenever the hell he wants, but he doesn't need to be created. Why? Because it says right there in his description, he is the creator, not to be created. Ta-da! My tautology is complete. Oh, yeah! The other thing, I don't know if you guys... read any of Comfort's stuff. I haven't actually read his book entitled You Can Lead an Atheist to Evidence, but You Can't Make Him Think. Christine, what do you think? What do you think about that, being an intelligent design expert? Can you lead an atheist to evidence about intelligent design and make him think about it?
I think that if they have something about what you say that could be tested
empirically,
they should bring it on.
Yeah. See, that sounds hard. Testing empirically. They don't really have a habit of doing that, actually, so you can kind of understand why they don't do it. The next thing I want to talk about is a, I don't know if any of you have been keeping up with that. There was a new survey from the Pew Forum on Religion, Religion and Public Life that found that atheists and agnostics scored higher than any other demographic when it came to religious education, which I found kind of interesting and very telling. Probably for the reason that most of you, I don't know how many people here, I'd love to hear you guys clap. How many people here used to be religious and are now atheists? Can I hear you? Yeah? All right, so, well, probably about half. Now, right, as a follow-up, the Washington Post, which is a, you know, such a liberal paper, came out with an article called Trivia Kings, But Bad Thinkers, Understanding Over Fact. So I'll read a couple quotes from him, and I want to get the panel's thought on this. Here's the first quote. The secular elite has provided a wretched religious education by all but banning it as a topic for serious inquiry. This is an explanation as to why religious people don't know as much as we do, by the way. Meanwhile, they know just enough about religion to get some facts right on a pop religion quiz. They know some of the lyrics of religion, but cannot hear the music. So apparently all you guys are tone deaf. You have any thoughts on being tone deaf, buddy?
That last quote was from the Washington Post. Was it somebody was writing an op-ed? Or
the Washington Post article was written by John Mark Reynolds, who is a crackpot. But I need to talk about his qualifications. What are his qualifications? He's an expert on nonsense. Yay!
Well, yeah, the Washington Post is notorious for turning its op-ed pages over to all types of warmongers and climate change deniers. And so without having a chance to do any research on this guy, I feel pretty safe in saying that he's probably a nut job. One thing that I think that particular Pew study shows, I don't think that it necessarily shows that atheists are smarter. I think it shows that if you're willing to treat a glorified child molester as God's representative on Earth, you might be dumber. I think that's what those results mean to me, sort of in a nutshell.
What about you, Matt? What? How do you feel about the fact that you have the facts but not really the understanding? Do you feel that's fair? Fair analysis?
Of course not. But I think it confirms a nice prejudice that atheists know more about religion than the religious. And it also confirms, I remember a friend of mine did a survey to discover how many people were religious, and one of the questions was, do you think about God every day? And he was like, what a dumb question. Every atheist thinks about God all the time because we're atheists. And your average person who goes to a Catholic church just shows up and maybe thinks about God on a Sunday, but really doesn't take it seriously. It's because we take it seriously that we know more about the different alternative religions.
Well, he had another great quote, which is, I'm sure most of you will also appreciate this. I'm nothing but appreciative quotes, eh? Everybody loves these. Here's this next one. If you want to win Platonic Trivial Pursuit, I don't even know if that's a game, they are your man. But if you want to understand Plato, they are quickly left behind. So anybody here doesn't understand Plato's ideas here, even though you understand apparently the facts of Plato? That's a really nice quote. How do you respond to the idea that we're bad thinkers? That would be basically my question to you guys. Are we bad thinkers? Are atheists? Well, I know that's redundant. Are we? How? Why do you think they think that we're bad thinkers?
I think it makes him feel better, but he hasn't presented an argument. He's just presented an insult. And one of the interesting things was that surveys show that atheists tend to be better educated, but in this test, they put that to one side, so they compared people of equal education, and they still found that a highly educated atheist knew more about religions than a highly educated Protestant, Catholic, or any other belief group.
Well, what can we say? I know that we like to think that our shit don't stink, but I think when it comes to stuff like that, it definitely demonstrates that you can make a lot of baseless claims, like saying, like, oh, well, atheists must be ignorant. They don't believe in God. Of course they must be crazy. God is awesome. And meanwhile, we're like, which one are you talking about, really? And let me just sit you down, and I'm going to just completely smack your ass. All right, let's turn it over to questions, because I see people. There's actually a mic here, so if you have any questions, step up to the mic, and hopefully we'll get the panel to answer these questions.
First of all, I don't have so much of a question. I just wanted to give you guys a sense of perspective. As-tu des francophones ici? Des Québécois? Français? Oui? OK, like, vous allez me comprendre quand je... We're in Montreal right now. Now, I know that I've heard the term New Atheist. You have to understand something. In the French mind, atheism is not new. Okay, we go back to Michel de Montaigne. You know, man is a curious animal. He can't even create a worm, but he's creating gods by the dozen. So they have a very rich tradition of free thinking in France. And I prefer to use the term free thinker because I like to describe what I am, not what I'm not. I don't believe in God, so you can call me an atheist if you want, but I run a show. My name is Jean Hodgkinson, by the way. I was born in Quebec. So you have to understand there's a distinction between atheism, which is an idea, and what we really need to do is, sur le plan politique, the social, you know, like you were mentioning, letting religious people tell people how to vote. Denis Diderot, another French free thinker, said that you're not going to get rid of religion until you get rid of the human race. So we have to, I think, accommodate ourselves to believing that, okay, well, we're going to be stuck with it. So what we have to do is live with it. We have to learn to control it. And I know that a lot of English Canada, especially with the Hérouville thing that exploded with, you know, the town that said no hijabs, no throwing acid, or not hijabs, no throwing acid in women's face, women are allowed to drive. Which hit like the BBC. It went worldwide. And English Canada likes to talk about how that's racist. Muslims like to talk about that as well, as if religion is a skin color when it's really a set of doctrines that you decide to believe in. So we have to start going after those kinds of that cloudy thinking that goes on in particular. And the best way to do that is on the political sphere. Because the province of Quebec, like France, with the revolution in 1789, I don't know how many people know this, but in France, they abolished the Christian calendar for like 10 years after that revolution. It was fucking serious, man. And it took a few more revolutions to finish it off, but they're very clear about that. Your religion is your personal business. We're shoving that back into the church. You're allowed to keep it, but it's not the government's business, whether you believe or don't believe. Philippe Besson, who's going to be speaking here, I met him actually at the IHEU in Paris in 05, and he did an interview for me for my radio show, Free Thought Radio, Friday morning, CKLN. Look it up.
It's a blog!
It didn't happen this morning because I was here, but he said that. He said it's not a problem to be an atheist in France because the government that's not their business, right? And they've had a very serious tradition of doing that, and I think that's what's missing in the English-speaking world. Partially because of the tradition of, you know, England doesn't have a written constitution, whereas in France they say, no, it's write it down. There it is.
Well, who's the head of state and head of the religion?
The Queen.
Right.
And we're stuck with her here. And I mean, this is the thing, because in Quebec what they've done, they had not a lot of atheists in Quebec. 85% of this province still identifies as Catholic, but this is the highest, in terms of abortion rates, it's the highest in Canada. They're having children, the marriage rate's gone down, but they're still having kids. What else? They bat them.
Well, don't forget
same-sex marriage. They're the province most in favor of that. The highest abortion. So what they identify as Catholics, but when the church starts telling them what they should be doing, they're like, "You just keep it out of my face, asshole. It's none of your business." And I think that's what we really have to start doing as atheists, as free thinkers, whatever. Because as Philippe Besson said, most of France is Catholic. They identify as Catholics. Half of them don't believe in God, so I don't know how they're still Catholic, but whatever. But that's where you have to start looking, is start to, instead of doing little individual things, when we start getting together in groups, is start pressuring politicians. Daniel Payet, I did an interview with Daniel Payet here in Montreal. They still do prayers in City Hall before the meetings. She took them to the Human Rights Commission, and they were told twice, stop doing that. She said, you can do your prayers, do it behind closed doors before you come out in public. I don't want to, she said, like, you know, everybody's standing up for prayer. I'm not standing up. I'm not here to pray. If I wanted to do that, I'd go to church. So we have to really start putting pressure on politicians, social programs, okay? Because as we all know, religion is primarily rooted in fear. Okay, these people are afraid of the fact that there might not be an afterlife. So until we deal with that emotional attachment, we have to deal with making sure that people, well, you hear about it in the Muslim world with the terrorism. Oh, there's poverty, blah, blah, blah. You have to make sure that people are well-fed, housed, they have health insurance. Well, all you Americans in here. Stuff like that. You have to make sure that people's physical needs are taken care of. That will and let them believe what they want to believe, but they can't be pushing onto the public sphere. So one last piece of advice I'll give to you Anglophones. I'm a Quebecer. I do a lot of I did an article on secularism in this province for the Ryerson Review of Journalism, my graduating year in 06. They didn't want to print it. And I told them, because they wanted one on separatism. I said, that's not an issue. Secularism is the issue. And you assholes in English Canada might actually learn something from this. Oh, well, we're not going to print this. It's offensive. 6 months later was when Érouville exploded. So I'm like, well, there you go. But here's
what is your final piece of advice?
Yeah. Well, here's the final. Well, those of you who are dicks and like to get in people's face, just keep using your sledgehammer. But you got to turn. This is a trick that you can use. Not a trick, but a good turnaround. You got it on people who may be moderates, because you know you hear about that. Oh, the aggressive atheists are scaring away the moderates who might help us out. You got to turn it on people. And what I like to use is very simple. If you got a Catholic or an Anglican, whatever the religion may be, you ask them, right? Because a lot of people say, well, my religion says we got to do this. We got to do that. Abortion is a good example. Take that and turn it around on them and say, well, you're Catholic. How would you like to live under Sharia law? They wouldn't like it. So why would you expect that your religious affiliation should be controlling the lives of other people like myself? It doesn't matter which religion they have, I can say that. That, you know, I don't participate in that. So, you know, we have to start going after the politics and the social, you know, on the social level, I think less so than the ideological. Like, let them talk about creationism. I know that's kind of tough with the science, and let scientists deal with that. But on the larger social plan, I think we really have to start looking at the French model and start implementing some of the social gains that they've made. As a result, because
just don't emulate their hygiene habits. That's the advice.
Their which?
The French for France. Don't emulate their hygiene. You ever heard of this? French are smelly. They don't like to take showers. That's the stereotype.
Neither do
You're
the
killing
English.
Me here.
Have you ever
You're
been to
me
England? The English don't brush their teeth. I don't get
my
that.
My joke flopped. Thank you.
But but that's one thing, folks. You got to start focusing on the politics of it, like Harper, and he's got like I did some comedy with John last night. I mean, when Gary Goodyear, the Minister of Science, is a young Earth creationist in this country, I mean, the politics of it, we have to start pushing more, because it's, you know, once they get a hold of the levers of government, we know what happens.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Bienvenue à Montréal, Simon.
That mic seems a little bit high for you.
Well, if a question is allowed.
Yes, absolutely.
Christine, as I understand it, your work is to communicate scientific ideas to the general public. Is that correct?
I'm looking at how the intelligent design movement is using communication strategies to position their theory as a valid scientific alternative.
I wonder what advice you can give us who are frequently on a personal one-on-one basis drawn into, how can you believe that? Not so much information, because I think most people in this room have information about evolution and proofs and such, but there have to be strategies to break down resistance to information, and I'm guessing you're an expert on
that. I'm hoping to become one. I'm starting out. I think the most important thing is to keep it as an education, or if it's going to be an education, to position it as an example of bad science. I think it needs to start right when children are little, and that's not something we want in our classroom.
I would also argue if you're ever having a conversation with a creationist, I mean, the odds of you actually changing their minds about creationism is probably quite rare. But I always like to give the, you know, sort of like the fun fact of saying, well, you believe that the Earth was created when the Sumerians invented beer. Is that about it? That's when God decided, oh, let there be light and beer, apparently, at the same time. Yeah, next question.
It's not really a question. I have just to tie this in that you spoke about the witnesses.
Yeah, can you?
The Jehovah's Witnesses and our knowledge of religion more than their own. More than once, Jehovah's Witnesses have come to my house and you see one knowledgeable one, one night with a little child. So when they come in, I tell them that who predicted the world was going to end in the 70s? Well, usually two out of the three don't know that. So what you did is you have a little kid that doesn't want to be there, and eyes wide open. The other one explains, well, that was a mistake. They miscalculated. So you just you immediately put them on the defensive. The kid's happy that there's somebody challenging him. He doesn't want to deal with it. And like I said, it proves that the we as thinkers know more about a lot of these people's own religion than the people themselves. So, you know, that's happened to me more than once. And like you said, and the other thing that tied in is that they can't attack our ideas. They attack us with militancy, activism. That's the only thing they can say, because they really can't attack what we
do. Yeah, that's a good one. Sure.
Your virgin atheist convention years, and I would like to tell you that Saturday night after hours of parties to rock.
I was saying I was going to be at the sock hop. What are you talking about?
Number one. And number two, you also kind of mentioned something about religious organizations or churches putting a lot of money into essentially political. Why does anybody do anything about that? Well, in fact, the Freedom from Religion Foundation based in Madison, Wisconsin, I don't know how familiar you are with them, but they do that all the time. They have a lawsuit with which churches for some reason, and they may have to move them on. They essentially are the almost legal arm of the atheist movement, and they do call these churches on them.
Oh yeah, no, I didn't want to suggest no one's doing anything about it. What I meant more of a kind of like a society in general, right? And even back in the day where separation of church and state became kind of an issue in the United States, the reason why it was so popular was because other religions were pushing it forward. They said, I don't want a Catholic telling me that I can't be a Protestant. And so it was a lot of religious people were behind the idea of separation of church and state. I think that they've abandoned that because they sort of see the advantage of having a Christianity in general being pushed down everybody's throat. And that's the kind of thing that we have to sort of like call into attention. Also, I think that Susan Jacoby was saying that we need to recruit some of the moderates to our side a little bit of saying, well, listen, do you really want religion and messing with politics when it's not your religion? I mean, it's a simple question, right? It's like it's not all the same. And when somebody was someone's a different religious denomination than you trying to pass through laws, you can get kind of off put by that. So I didn't want to suggest that no one's doing anything. My whole thing is, I think that as a society in general, be you unbeliever or even a believer, you have to take a stance against this kind of thing and say, you got to stay out of politics.
Hi, just a comment. I think there might be some validity to the idea that in terms of knowing about religion and knowing facts about religion, there may be some validity to the intelligence factor. But I think also it's important to remember in this, when we consider this, that this is the atheist, non-atheist, or the religious versus atheist paradigm is very much a dominant-subordinate kind of situation. And if I'm in the dominant group, if I'm a man, if I'm white, whatever the predominant...
Like me! Yay, I'm
right.
The dominant! Yay!
The dominant cultural group about whatever you're talking about, I don't really need to know about you other people. You know, if my culture is dominant and I've got the power and I've got the political power and at least the internal idea that I'm, you know, the good guy, I really don't have to know very much about you or about me. But if you're in the subordinate group, it behooves you to know a great deal about the dominant individual.
Yeah, well, it definitely makes sense in terms of the reason why we'd be more educated. We just have to be,
you
right?
You have to. The black slave has got to know every nuance of the master's behavior, eye contact, lack of eye contact, everything. At least up until today, it's really important for women to know what's going on with their husbands. And husbands can be pretty, maybe too broad, but I think men can be pretty clueless about women. Because
let's see. Let's have a show of hands. How many men here are clueless about women? I'm one of these men.
Because they're the dominant group. And they're the dominant group. And so I think there's a lot of that, is that people... religious people not necessarily people who believe in God, but religious people, which I really separate out, are the dominant social group, and so they don't really have to know very much about anything.
So I have a question back for you then. Will it be a success when we have a society where most people are atheists, and atheists become atheists just out of inertia because that's what the parents believe, and therefore atheists become just as ignorant as dominant religions are now because they don't have to care? Will that count as a triumph, or do you think
no.
we need to have educated atheists?
The reason is because the level of thought and work that it takes to be an atheist is pretty intense, and also because I don't really think that atheism offers the kind of warm fuzzies that religion can offer us. And so I think that, I mean, to be Catholic, for example, I'm raised Catholic, I work in a Catholic high school, and being Catholic isn't really so much even about the theology, it's the huge community and activities and all of this stuff, and if I don't have that, you know, there just isn't the same social cushion. So, you know, maybe I don't think we're going to get there.
Thank you. Yes?
I want to be again about the separation of church and state. In fact, the word wall of separation comes from Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, that's right.
To a Baptist priest. So at that time, the Baptists were very pro-separation of the church and state. And what we have seen since 100 years, 50 years, 20 years, we see a coalition growing bigger and bigger. But remember that in Ireland, Protestants and Catholics should stand against each other. They are
stones
enemies.
If you're lucky.
Okay? Yes, if you're lucky. They are enemies. But in the United States, they form an alliance. The right wing of the Catholic and the right wing of the Protestants. And the evangelical join. If you talk about Mormons, Latter Day Saints, to an evangelist, they see the Mormons as agent of Satan.
Well, they view them as a Christian cult, actually. It's how they generally view them.
Yeah, but they hate each other. But when it comes time to talk against homosexuals, against women, against atheists, they are together. And by the way, you were talking about using tax exemption status to collect money to do politicking. And there's an organization in the United States, it's the American United Separation of Church and State. And they are challenging these religious groups. For instance, Jerry Falwell, Liberty University, has lost his tax exemption status a couple of times. He denies it, okay, but we have the paper, we have the report in the newspaper. He has what is, and currently religious right is on the offensive on that issue. They want to challenge the law, but they will lose.
I like that attitude. They will lose, everyone!
There have been many comments in this meeting linking atheism and intelligence and education. I'd like to point out you don't have to be very smart.
No. You just we all start as atheists, right? We don't necessarily have a lot of knowledge, but you don't. That's probably precisely why you were born one. It's like, well, no one's indoctrinated me yet.
Yeah. I have fallen favor to speak.
Well, you know, I'm in the same boat. I was actually never born or into a religion, never got to learn. Actually, that's one of the problems. I have a hard time sometimes actually, I don't want to say empathizing, but understanding the struggle that some people go through when they try to abandon their religion. I've never had to go through that struggle, so I don't empathize necessarily. So anybody out there who's had that, I'm like, more power to you. Congratulations on being able to throw off those shackles. I don't know if I would have been able to, seriously, honestly.
When I was 7, my parents didn't send me to Sunday school, but friends went. So I asked them if I could go. He said, sure. So I went there, and I sat down. And he said, this is ridiculous. The first Sunday school I went to was Christian Science, and I had strep throat. And they said, you can't get sick. Well, the doctor treated me, explained the germ theory of the disease and what antibiotics were. And it said, I'm no idiot. Also, I had a serious problem controlling my anger and frustration. Astrologers or homeopaths. But a year or so ago, I hit on a fairly good solution. These two morons came to my door. I said, stop. I have an honors degree in biochemistry, graduate degree in mathematics, 35 years of reading about philosophy, cosmology, and a lot of happiness. And I said, do I come to your house? And he started looking stuck. I said, get off my property. Within 2 weeks. Stop! And they ran. They actually ran down my walk.
Right, thank you. Thank you.
As a quick follow up to that, I wasn't raised religious. I was one of the only people in my hometown who didn't go to church, and I went to church with my neighbors sometime, and I went and I was like, well, this is the first day I went, just like you. I was like, this is insane. Like, why are people going in this? This is crazy. And the moment when I was probably 7, 8, 9, because I just wanted to go to church because that's what, you know, literally every other person in my town did. And I think the moment that I identify is when I sort of became self-identified as an atheist, or sort of more vaguely as an existentialist. Was there's an episode of The Simpsons. I don't know if we have any fans here, but I had a feeling there might be. There's an episode where Jay Sherman, the critic, crosses over and he's talking to Aunt Patty and Aunt Selma, and he says Sartre is smartra, but Camus can do. And I was 11 when I heard that, and I walked over to my parents. I was like, who are these people? And my parents were like, well, they're French philosophers who didn't believe that God existed, and that we create our own meaning and we endow the things that we do with our own meaning. And at 11, I was like, yeah, that seems about right. And I just never looked back. It was that simple to me. And at a very young age, people, as long as you haven't already been sort of brainwashed by that time, I think that people are very, you know, kids can be very, very receptive to that kind of message. And it's not, you're not stealing any, like, by presenting kids with this sort of, you know, an existentialist or whatever kind of, atheist view that you want to say, you're not stealing anything by saying, oh, well, you know, grandma's not coming back, grandma's not in heaven. Kids are able to deal with that stuff if you just lay it out in a clear way, I think.
I like how your parents knew who Sartre was. That's impressive! Let me tell you something! Alright, last question, yeah? Or comment?
It's been estimated that religions in the United States make trillions of dollars and deprive taxpayers, deprive our society of great amounts of money. But I think we could convince a lot of moderates to come over on our side if we had some reliable data on how much they actually take in and how much the taxes have status to drives. Us, and I'd just like to get anybody's comments on how we can get that to work.
That's good. Does the panel have any comments on how to remove the tax-exempt status of religion? That's
hard one. Yeah, two steps. There is some data out there. You can get some from the Treasury Department in the U.S. in particular, although that only tells you what's being claimed. It doesn't tell you what's going in the plate on a Sunday. Also, the last issue of International Humanist News, which is the magazine of my organization, was focused on what we call the purple economy, which is the amount of money that goes to religions around the world. And there was a lot of information in there about many different countries showing how huge the religious sector is in these countries. And I think our argument should be that it's fine for charities to have tax-exempt status in those countries they do if they're doing charitable work. And religions should qualify for that if they're doing charitable work, but they shouldn't get a tax exemption just because they're religious. And if a humanist organization does charitable work, it qualifies. It has to show it's actually doing some good. And I think religions shouldn't be discriminated against, but they should meet the same burden that every other organization has to meet.
One thing
International Humanist News, and you can actually download it for free. This is how I deprive my organization of money. You can download it for free from ihu.org.
That was a great answer. Hey, you were on the podcast.
I just couldn't stay away. I got one question for Chris about creationism, because and this has been bugging me for a while, and I see so much of it in the States, and it really seems like creationism is almost winning. We've all seen the YouTube videos of people in class questioning their science teacher, Texas changing the textbook. You research this, so you know more than just maybe what the media is telling us. You know, 50 articles about how it's coming back doesn't exactly make it true, but are we losing the battle against creationism, say, down in the States and elsewhere?
I hope not, but I think there is a real problem there, and you mentioned earlier the wedge strategy, and if you look at that document and what they've outlined, it's basically a 20-year plan, and I think by calling it intelligent design versus creationism, it opens up, it broadens the discussion and sort of invites more people in, and I think that's sort of where the problem lies, and I think we need to sort of address that by looking at their communication strategies and meeting them in kind.
Do you want to squeeze in one more? Is everybody okay? Are we able to stretch this out? Are you guys hungry or what's going on? Because I don't want to keep you if you're not totally being entertained. You can leave and I'm not going to be insulted in any kind of way, all right?
About people coming to your door talking about religion, my husband has a very good solution. He answers the door nude.
Yes, yes.
It stops them. Every time we move, we try it, it works.
And I don't even have to tell them my degree.
Like most of you, I'm terribly bothered by this tax-exempt status that the religions are getting. Is it a possibility that we could become a religion with God as our element? I mean, I totally believe that if you want to believe in a God or call it a God, it's the element, okay? Yeah.
That's a lot of gods
and the
there,
chemical,
right?
But this, if I had to say what God is to me, it's the element. It's what began.
So you would say you're a Spinozist, I suppose, right?
I
Baruch Spinoza sort of like speaks to you in that way? A pantheist?
No,
necessarily.
Just that the element, the essence of life, of the universe, you know, the chemical reactions, that to me, if you want to call it God, I don't care. But if we can get tax-exempt status, let's go for it. I mean, that's the only way we're going to get any power.
Probably. Do you have a question? Well, yeah, go to the mic.
To the whole concept of declaring secularism a religion, if you declare secularism as a religion, the next step that the religious right will take will be to declare science one of the precepts of our religion, and that we are giving a single religious viewpoint in the public school system. And they will come back and use that as a requirement to teach intelligent design, because we are favoring one religion over another. Our power in the separation of church and state is that we're not a religion. If we put ourselves in that same category, everything that we teach, everything secular, becomes fair game. That's a very dangerous ground to cross.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the other thing too is there's more than religions as nonprofit organizations, right? I think that for what we should do is try to educate people. I mean, it's definitely kind of going over and I'm not going to say spread secularism per se. We just want people to be more educated. Hell, I would have no problem if we were distributing Bibles if we made sure that everybody read the damn Bible. There's no surer way to be an atheist than to read the Bible, all right? Okay, well, I guess we're going to call that a show. I'd like to thank my panelists for coming up. I'd like to thank everybody who came, and enjoy the Atheist Conference, everybody.